Hello and welcome. Our conversation today is with a fellow Summit employee, Dr. Roger Erdvig. Roger is the Director of Worldview Education here at Summit Ministries. And welcome to our conversation here, Roger.
Thanks, Aaron. Looking forward to talking about some exciting stuff.
Yeah. Would you just share a little bit about what you do here at Summit and, just your family life and where you're coming from and so on? That'd be great.
Sure. So at Summit, as Director of Worldview Education, I work with schools, Christian schools, churches, families, family groups, and Christian universities to really help immerse the rising generations in a biblical worldview, both through the classroom and through more organic ways in the whole atmosphere of a school or university or even a home. So that takes the shape of some writing, some speaking and traveling and then consulting and coaching with folks. So that's kind of on the professional side, but I have served as a head of school at two Christian schools for about 15 years. I've been involved in professional leadership and life coaching, but most importantly, I have five children and they range in age from about 31 down to 20. And then four grandchildren. So home has been a very busy place for me in terms of working with students that live right underneath my roof.
I don't know that I realized you had had five kids. That's awesome. I knew you were a parent. I've heard you talk of your kids, but that's so wonderful. It's so relevant as we enter into this conversation related to parenting, kind of wearing those hats of your educational experience,
yeah.
And your life as a parent. You know what it's like to, like you said, have kids under your roof and trying to really put teeth on ideas and theory and stuff like that. What does it look like to really make these things happen? So good deal. Well, we're going to talk about this kind of broad topic of education here. And so, I think when we hear the word education and we start entering into like August and that, you start seeing back to school commercials on TV and, all these things, you start feeling the anticipation or dread, whatever it might be, rise of getting back into the school rhythm. There's a lot of things that start flowing to our minds. And many of them, at least for me, seem kind of detached from my role as a parent, right? School is kind of outside of the home. It's, it's just this kind of other thing that I send my kids to and I support, but it's not, directly correlated with my role as a parent perhaps. And maybe that's not the best way to describe it, but I think we all kind of feel that separation. Help us just think about that maybe differently. Is there a way that these intersect? Is there a way that we should be thinking about, in the broad education field, where it does come alongside our parenting role?
Yeah, I do agree that it's easy to separate those things. And as you were talking about, getting ready for school in August, I kind of pictured the, it was probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, maybe even more, that our local Walmart started putting all the, school supplies out. And you can kind of get the feeling that school, which is really our kids' education, is all about spiral notebooks and nifty little pens and, trapper keepers from when I was a kid. And so we can kind of get into the mindset that, it's August or it's September, so now education starts. When if you push back on that just a little bit, I think most parents realize that whether they want the responsibility or not, or whether they feel qualified, they really are the primary educators of their kids, regardless of whether their kids are pulling out their spiral-bound notebooks to take notes when mom and dad talk. Wouldn't that be funny if they did? But I like to see it really all as one whole. One of the things I neglected to mention in my brief bio was that my kids have spent time homeschooling. We homeschooled for 11 years, and then we were in Christian schools for about 15 years. So we understand from our family's perspective kind of both worlds, where you have your kids at home and you think, yeah, we are the primary educators, but then we also had to really learn what that was like having our kids in school do that as well. And, over time, I've realized so much more or seen so much more how the biblical principles of Deuteronomy chapter 6 and other places throughout Scripture really point to the fact that we as parents are responsible for our children's education, whether we delegate some of that out to a local school or a homeschool co-op or a university model school. We may delegate parts of that out. In fact, we likely will. But ultimately, we are responsible and need to be very, very involved in our kids' education.
Yeah, talk about that responsibility. I agree that we do feel it. We know it. It's maybe the separation is sometimes a desired, you know, separation. We want to kind of push it off or something because it's hard work. Yeah. But what does that responsibility mean? What is that, you know, on the ground, like, what am I actually responsible for as a parent in this space?
And again, I think our default setting is often, I've got to help my kids with my homework, or, I've got to make sure they study for a test.
Yeah.
Those are certainly all parts of it when our kids are at some kind of a formalized school outside of our home. So I don't want to discount that. But I like to think of our homes really as kind of educational greenhouses for our kids, and particularly with worldview, which I know we'll probably talk a bit about in our conversation today. But it really involves seeing the everyday life that we live with our kids as an opportunity and a responsibility biblically to be shaping our students, our children, both their worldview and their understanding of even practical mechanics of how the world works. So the most seamless way I've seen that done by parents, and we've attempted to do as parents here in our home when our kids were young, is to make education under this broader umbrella of personal growth and development, just what we talk about and what we do all the time, to try and eliminate some of that bifurcation between formalized school, notebooks, pads, and what we do at home. So that takes shape of sometimes some formal learning experiences that we might do at home, where we might actually read a book out loud to our kids and talk about it. You know, that feels a little bit more formal. But it also goes to the informal, where in just about everything we're doing, we look for reasons to involve our kids in that work. And not just because we enjoy being with our kids, and hopefully our kids enjoy being with us, but because there's a mentoring that goes on, which is a key component of education, when we just bring our kids with us. So if we have an errand to run and we're heading to Lowe's or Home Depot, we take our kids with us, and we use that as an example or an opportunity to explore the world around us and explore. There's so much you can explore at a store, from budgeting to how you actually make decisions about what you buy to how much money is in my wallet and what the difference between money and a credit card is. Like, there's so many learning opportunities that I would say, and this is no knock to teachers, I've worked in schools for so many years, is as important, if not more important, than some of the skills they learn in the classroom. Would be the life and living skills that they learn from mom and dad, from shopping to home repair to working on the cars. And sometimes we forget as parents that our kids actually live with us so that they can learn from us. And that's a 24/7 type of involvement.
I love that. Yeah, they live with us so that they can learn from us. Yeah, I think we default to, well, they live with us because that's their only option, you know. Yeah. And, you know, but there's a purpose to these things in the way that we grow. I love your way of putting education kind of under this much broader umbrella of growth and development.
Yeah.
And I know you talk about worldview formation a lot. You mentioned worldview a minute ago. Would you just help us understand what that means of really forming and growing and helping your kid develop? What put all those pieces together for us?
So I would say, and I agree, that the overall umbrella of what we are doing with our children would be to provide a lifestyle of worldview formation, where we're constantly helping our kids and ourselves, incidentally, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point, you know, our role modeling. But we're constantly looking to say, okay, how do I view the world? Am I seeing things the way God sees it? Am I desiring the things that God desires and would have me to desire? And are my habits aligned with Scripture? That is like, you know, for me, even as a middle-aged adult, that's like a full-time job just for me, aligning all those things and continually asking God to search my heart and show me. So that's really the big picture umbrella that schooling, formal schooling and academic work is a subset of. And I often think about it like this. And many times when I talk to parents, when they're trying to make significant educational decisions for their kids, whether it's what school to send them to or what courses I should take or what sports they should be involved in, I enjoy having parents go through this exercise. And okay, let's put aside your 12-year-old kid for a minute. I know you're overwhelmed. I know you've got travel baseball and you've got dance class and you've got church youth group. You are overwhelmed, parent. I get it. Let's press pause on that and picture your 12-year-old when she's 30 years old. Like, think in terms of decades instead of weeks. And say to yourself, what is going to be most important when my daughter, when my son is 30 years old? Like, when they come back to my house, because hopefully they'll be moved out by then. When they come back to my house as a 30-year-old, what's going to make me well up with joy? And there's hardly a parent that says that they get an A in algebra. That is going to carry me through the decades, you know, that they have their notebook perfectly organized in their locker, completely clean. Parents don't think that way when you press them. What we do is we think of family gatherings where there's a sense of peace in our home because our relationships are good. There's a sense of destiny where our kids are actually fulfilling a vocation that God has called them to, and they're thriving in that, and they're actively involved in a local church, and they're raising their kids to know and serve Christ. Well, schooling is a huge part of that, but it's, again, only one part of how you actually develop that kind of human being, you know, with a biblical worldview where desires, thoughts, and actions are aligned with Scripture. So then we turn back to when they're 12 years old, and we start thinking about, well, what choices do I need to make today? What things should my child be involved in? How do I need to train them today in order to become that person when they're 30 years old? So I like to help parents think in terms of decades instead of weeks. And we parents are notorious for getting, you know, mired in the weeks and months of childhood as opposed to seeing in the long range. So that helps me have a big picture view of what I'm doing every day then. That big picture vision informs when we're changing the oil on the car, why that's so important. When we're serving a neighbor, when we're having our kids do things that are outside of their comfort zone and that are making them struggle, it takes on a whole new plane of value.
Yeah, what a perspective shift, right? In a life that is really, really busy, and there are a lot of things right in front of you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in the thick of it with really, really young kids. And you know, I have a 2-year-old and just twins that are almost 2 months old.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to have that long-term perspective. And I was just encouraged by a mentor last week to do exactly that, because that's what pulls you through and helps you think, okay, what are those choices that I'm making today that's forming people and not just educating a single skill or a single, you know, fact or piece of information or something,
right,
but really, really forming a person. Yeah, that's really powerful. Talk about that alongside. So the truth is, though, as you mentioned, we do offload some of this stuff to you know, we outsource it in whatever way, sometimes intentional, sometimes accidentally. But in those intentional moments, when we offload that to, say, a school setting or whatnot, how do we still kind of, how should we still engage? Because that is a formation. And if our primary responsibility is to be engaged in that formation, but it's not happening at home, like, how do we continue that engagement beyond just maybe making sure homework is done on time?
Yeah, that's a powerful question that every parent ought to be asking. And if they're not, I would say, hey, wake up, parent. So to ask, how do I be involved in the formation? I would say the start of that, and somebody recently asked me, how do I keep having a voice in my child's life when I'm sending them somewhere else for school? And yeah, I'd like to tweak that a little bit. I'd like to say, stop having so much voice and have more ear, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'll explain that. When you send your kid off to school, again, whether it's for 1 day a week or a couple hours a day or a full day, they are experiencing life in ways that you don't have the opportunity to walk with them. So you're not able to see what's going on. We don't see how they relate with their peers. We don't see how they relate with their teachers, what trials and difficulties and what victories they have throughout a given day. And the challenge with that is that the engine of worldview formation is processing experiences. So by nature, children tend not to be reflective. They don't really process life. They just have it. So they go from experience to experience. And if they don't have faithful parents walking alongside of them, helping them to process those experiences, their worldview development can be impoverished, and they can miss opportunities to have their desires, thoughts, and habits aligned, more aligned with the kingdom of God. So that's why I say we need to think in terms of not so much as having a voice as having an ear in our children's lives. And this gets super practical. So this is not anything complicated at all. But it's really about learning to affirm our kids and ask good questions. In fact, listening to our kids is so critically important. And I kind of chuckle because you're almost to the stage in your parenting where the questions are going to drive you crazy.
You know, yeah.
My two grandchildren, my two oldest grandchildren, I have four, my two oldest are now 2.5, pushing 3 years old. So of course, as their little burgeoning worldview is expanding, they are like input magnets. They are just asking questions all the time. And you're in such a critical time because I see many parents not pay attention to their toddlers when they're asking questions and getting really tired of it. And what happens is that creates a relational foundation where when the parents are the ones that are asking the questions, the teens don't want to listen and they don't pay attention. So I'm not making any predictions, you know, ironclad predictions, but generally speaking, kind of like the Proverbs give us general principles for life. The more you listen to and engage your toddlers with their questions, the more they will be willing to do so with your questions when they're teenagers. So that's kind of like the foundation, just being a great listener and engaging with our kids' questions. But as they get older and as they go to school, they need your help as parents to process their experience. And I don't care what kind of school they're in. They could be in a public school, private school, elite private school, boarding school, university, wherever they are. They need mom and dad to help them process their life experiences because that's what shapes our desires, thoughts, and habits. And hopefully it happens in a positive way. So where I'm saying this is super simple is having in mind some ways to engage our children in conversation about what they're experiencing when we're not with them in a way that doesn't feel judgmental, in a way that doesn't feel like you're, you know, a media outlet looking for a good story, in a way that doesn't make it sound like you're trying to beat up on the teacher, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So here are some real simple ways to do that, simple ways to think about it. One is to make sure all of our questions have an element of affirmation in them, and then that they're as open-ended, non-leading, and non-judgmental as possible, which is hard for us parents to do. because we tend to be, as parents, we think we're the voice for our kids instead of the ears many times. And I'm not doing some weird new age thing saying, you know, you shouldn't have any authority in your kid's life. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying as a basis of worldview processing. So what this means, I'll give you a couple examples. I think the most common question that is heard as soon as the kid either gets in the door from the bus or gets in the car at the carpool lane at school is, can you guess what it is, Aaron?
How was your day?
How was your day? That was it.
Yeah.
We've been asked that a million times and we've asked it a million times. And it is one of the most least effective questions ever because it's a closed-ended question that allows the child to say, fine,
good,
bad,
yeah,
good. So that's what I would consider a closed-ended question. It's not really effective to help your kid really process. Now, if you're just trying to make light conversation, I'm not trying to, you know, beat up on anyone for using that question. But if you really want to help your child process and be involved in their formation regarding what they experienced at school, then a better way to ask it, remember, affirmation plus a question. That sets us up for good communication with our kids. So here's an example. You seem like you had a good day today. What made today good? See what we did there? We're really asking the same thing. We're trying to probe. But instead of just that throwaway question that really has ended up being meaningless, kind of like, how are you? We've affirmed so that we're setting our child up to want to talk and to be drawn in because of positive. And then we ask a more broad-based question. So that's the first. The second would be to have a non-leading question. We parents are great at leading with our questions, and they're really not questions. They're actually their advice with a question mark tagged on the end. And our kids know that. Yeah. They're like, okay, they're asking me, but they're really not asking, they're telling. Yeah. So here's how you might change that. You hear that your kid had a challenge with the teacher. You might ask something like, don't you think you should talk to your teacher? Which is a leading question. Why don't you just come out and say, go talk to your teacher?
Right, right.
Instead, you can ask something, again, adding affirmation. That sounds like a tough situation. What do you think you can do to help resolve it? So you're kind of broadening things.
And opening things way up.
And here's what you're doing. You may have better conversations, you may not, but what you're doing is you're helping to drive the engine of worldview formation. Worldview formation happens when we deeply experience life and then we process it with it with ourselves, with the Lord, and with a trusted mentor or a friend. That's how worldview develops. And so these questions are simple ways we can do that. So finally, the judgmental questions, we're really good at it. You know, I still can picture my mom or my dad, you know, kind of coming into my room with the icy finger of condemnation saying, you know, look at this mess. Why did you not clean your room? Something about that word why brings me back, you know, to getting in trouble with mom and dad. Yeah. So we always use that. We use why all the time. And unintentionally, we can set up barriers between us and our kids. And so instead of, you know, why did you forget your homework again? Which is a freighted question. I mean, that is just loaded with so much. You're saying a lot by saying that. Pull back and say, what do you think kept you from handing in your homework on time today? So you're trying to help your kid process through their habits, their desires, their thoughts. And to me, kind of those relational dynamics of connecting with our kids and helping them process what went on during the day is one of the primary ways you as a parent can retain the authority and the responsibility for truly forming and educating your children.
Man, there's so many ways there that just has a lot of depth. So thank you for all of that. I'm sure those listening might rewind a couple minutes and go back and just listen through that again, because I think there's a lot there. I think, you know, one thing that just rises to the top is this requires us to, especially with that judgmental, like, you got to take a breath before you ask that question.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Right? You know, you got to, or maybe 10 minutes or whatever it is, but like you got to really take space and not be reactive to the scenario. Even when your kid gets in the car, think for a moment, okay, how can I observe?
Exactly.
How can I take this in? And then can ask an educated question that can help open up a conversation.
Right.
That's really cool. And the other thing that came, you know, as I'm just listening to you here is, I love what you said, that the conversations may or may not come from that, but that isn't the primary goal.
Right.
And it may come. And I would say if you're really intentional over time, they will come. But if that's the goal, then that's, you know, just a conversation is then the win. But the real win here is the development. It's
right.
The formation. It's the processing. I think that's such a helpful perspective shift, that we're not trying to instruct. We're not trying to change your kid's mind in this moment, but you're trying to set up a framework for being able to process experiences overall. What a kind of game-changing change in posture you can have.
Yeah, and it gives so much purpose to the everyday conversations we have. You know, I think parents, I mean, we're all guilty of this, but particularly as parents, we can think our parenting rises and falls on the big stuff. You know, the big trips we took, the big presents we gave, just the big. When in reality, I think the ability to form our kids and shape and be a partner in God's shaping process is really directly related to those everyday conversations, the simple interactions that make or break the half an hour ride from school to home. You know, riding home with tension because of a careless word shapes our kids. And I don't want to heap too much pressure on us. I mean, we got challenges as parents, of course, but I just think what I'm trying to say, we sometimes don't put enough importance on those everyday interactions to help our kids process their life experiences. And we end up focusing more on the big stuff, like, oh, I got to send them off to a camp, as opposed to actually having that time together.
Yeah. 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 It again is this perspective shift. How are we thinking about the long run? How are we thinking about every touch point and not just, some signpost or milestone
exactly.
along the way.
Yep.
So back to just kind of the role of helping, you know, formation takes place when we help our kids process experiences. When you said that, I immediately was like, man, I need help processing experiences, right? It's ongoing, right? This is not just, we don't just leave our parents' house and say, okay, I got the tools, even when it's done perfectly. So how do we as parents like set up a framework to model this, to, you know, do this in our own lives, in our own relationships, so that we become better at processing, so that we can help our kids process? Yeah. Like, what does that step look like?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. One of my favorite parenting books, actually, I got as a tip from Dr. Jeff probably 15 years ago. And I don't know if he still talks about this book, but it's got this great cover. I should have shown you a picture of it. A great cover. It's got a kid like whose face is ready to explode. And it says, and the name of the book is How to Say Goodbye to Whining, Complaining, and Bad Attitudes. Now, when you first pick up the book, you think, yeah, I want to figure out how to do this with my kid. Yeah. And then the fine print, it's hysterical. It's say goodbye to whining, complaining, and bad attitudes. And then the fine print is in you and your kid. Mm. And that you know, that's what the whole book is really about. You know, us as parents taking the lead in basically everything attitudinally or formationally we're asking of our kids, we're doing first. And we're creating an environment in our home where it's the most logical thing in the world to want to develop a worldview. Now, your three-year-old, your four-year-old is not going to cognitively be able to process that and say, oh, I'm developing my worldview. Yeah. But long before a child learns how to swim, they're in the water with mom and dad. And often we think of role modeling, and that's maybe a bad metaphor, but in role modeling, we often think that what we're doing is we're setting ourselves up as the model and then our kids are watching us. And that's part of it. But if we look at that swimming metaphor, let's say a family was super committed to swimming, and this is a metaphor for developing biblical worldview. So this is how it'll connect. You know, me and my wife were super swimmers. We're not, by the way, but it's a great metaphor. And we want our kids to be swimmers, and we think, well, they need to see us as role models. So every time we go to the pool, we bring them there, they sit on the side and they watch us swim. Every time we go to a swim tournament, by golly, our kids are there watching us swim. Well, we would say, parents, you guys are being ridiculous. Get the kid in the water. So what I'm saying here is role modeling is not merely doing what you want your kids to do in front of them. It's creating an environment in our households where that's the normal expectation of everybody. And they kind of get pulled into that flow, again, kind of using a swimming example. So what I mean by that is parents making some really strategic, probably more tactical decisions about the environment of their household and what goes on in that household. And my conviction is that impacts the soundtrack of our lives. Like, what kind of music do we have playing in our homes? I'm not saying all Christian music by any means, but that we're creating an environment where beauty is valued. And from the youngest age, our kids are learning to appreciate good music of all genres. We're watching quality movies that engage worldview issues, and we help our kids to do the same. Our home is full of books and needs to be full of books so that our kids are just seeing, they're in that environment where that's the expected norm. When we take car trips, we're listening to books on tape together as a family at the youngest age, even before they can understand what's being said, they're being exposed to the rhythms and syntax of beautiful language. And then you extend that, of course, into every spiritual area that we want them to develop as well. So role modeling starts with immersion. It starts with creating an environment that's immersive, as opposed to that's mommy and daddy's thing. And oh, maybe someday I'll do that, but that's mommy and daddy's thing. And they've invited us into it. They've gotten us in the water too. But then certainly, as that book title would suggest, we can't expect our kids not to whine, complain, and have a bad attitude if we ourselves are doing it. The converse is true. If we want our kids to have great attitudes, serving and loving others and honoring others above ourselves, then we need to be showing them how to do that and pull them along into that journey. Worldview formation, a critical part of worldview formation is our information diet, the things that we choose to bring into ourselves. That's a prime way to be doing the role modeling in front of our kids where we're bringing them into it. So the books we read, the podcasts we listen to, et cetera, et cetera. Things like phone-free zones for our older kids, you know, that we just, around our house, this is how we do it. You come in, you put your phone on the side table, and you only get it if it rings. You know, creating environments and then choosing as parents not to do the very things we don't want our kids to be doing. you know. Yeah. So a good rule of thumb, which I'll confess I go in and out of obeying, would be to say, you know what, if we're interacting together as human beings face to face, we're not checking our social media. We're just not doing that. That's not what we do at this household. So it's an immersive modeling environment.
Yeah, I think that's so key, because I think we can be on one end of the spectrum or the other. We can say, just watch me do it, or we can just say, I'll watch you do it. And you just, you know, you go try and figure it out.
Yes.
I was reading a book recently, and it was talking about some components like we're bringing up here, and it was watch me, and then I'll lead and you help, and then you lead and I help, and then I'll watch you. And like, that is way more of a immersive. It's whole. It's the entire process.
Right.
But it's engaged to where we're coming alongside and showing and observing and everything in between.
Yeah.
You know, way more. Yeah. Like you were saying, immersive, end to end kind of thing.
Yes. So
help us. Okay. As we draw our time to a close a little bit here, you know, you were saying earlier, a good reminder of education really being a part of this overall formation. And one key that I think would really be helpful to all of us is, you know, just having that longer term perspective. You specifically mentioned, like, think about the decades, and, you know, decades from now, you want your kids to have good relationships, fulfilling vocation, engaged church life, you know, and that they're walking in with the Lord, and that they're doing the same with their kids. So just, draw us up of what would be just a takeaway you would have parents, you know, give them a charge going into the school year, of embracing their role as the primary role in formation in their students' life.
Yeah. And I think you just did it for me. So thank you very much. It would be to, really, no parent would not benefit, and no child would therefore not benefit from mom and dad, or if it's a single mom, single dad, whatever, get with someone else that you can talk to. Spend an evening just dreaming about what God might have for your kids in that decades-long perspective. Write a list. Mm. Just write down the things that you think will be most impacting for them. And then think, and parents are smart, they can figure this out. And if not, they can go to someone for counsel and advice and talk to a mentor. Say, okay, I want my child to, and we can pick on, let's just say, one of the things I would want for my kids and have wanted would be that they're really self-sufficient in terms of, not that they can live off the grid necessarily, but they can change oil in their car. They can, you know, they can change a tire. They can fix a leaky faucet. You know, practically speaking, that they're self-sufficient and they're not so dependent on always paying someone else, because paying someone else all the time hinders your ability to give to others, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of reasons why I'd want my kids when they're 30 years old to be that way. Okay, so now backtrack that to today. My kid's 5, my kid's 12, my kid's 16. What's one or two things I can do this school year that will help equip them for that? Well, you might say, I don't know how to work on a car. I don't even know where the oil pan is. I don't even know what oil does. Well, find someone that knows it. Chances are in your sphere of influence, there's somebody that knows how to change oil in a car. And get your 5-year-old underneath the car with your cousin Joe or whatever and change the oil together. So that maybe is a real simple practical example, but just pick one or two things from that ultimate vision that you have for your kids, those qualities that you want there, including the biblical worldview aspects, and then choose one or two things you can concentrate maybe per quarter that you'd really look to move the ball a little bit forward on in training them and shaping them to have that attitude or that ability.
I love that. I think what I love the most about that is that for parents that are anywhere in the journey, whether it depending on the, doesn't matter, the age of their kids, or if they're listening to you and they're like, man, my kids are about to leave the house, and I've dropped the ball on so many of these things you guys are talking about. You can still do exactly what you just described.
Absolutely.
Even just chip away one or two things. You don't have to say, exactly, Okay, there was 100 things and I missed 98 of them. Don't worry about the 98. Just think about those two or whatever it might be. So yeah, I think that applies to all of us in different stages, different ways of application. So thank you so much for that, the practical nature of this conversation and helping us think about how we can engage in that education space, that it's not just, you know, notebooks and pens and trapper keepers, as you said, but it's just a piece of the entire formation of our kids, and we get to be a lead in that. So thanks so much, Roger. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And I know our audience is going to be blessed thinking through some of these things and implementing in their homes.
Thanks, Aaron. Great talking about one of my favorite subjects, raising our kids.